Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Universal Narratives podcast. As we continue to explore the topic of women careers, I'm very delighted to have two professionals from the field of school psychology with me today, Jessica and Sungul, to learn more about what it takes to be a school psychologist and their journey as school psychologists. So let's get started. Jessica and Sungul, let's start by you telling us about yourself, your backgrounds, your educational backgrounds, and what you currently do.
I can get started. My name is Sungul Bairam. I am currently a school psychologist in a public school district in New Jersey. I am working with the younger students, so pre-K through sixth grade. I graduated from my master's program 3 years ago from Queens College. And since then, I've been in this field. Prior to becoming a school psychologist, I had my bachelor's in psychology. So that's basically
great.
It.
Great. Jessica?
And I'm a school psychologist as well at the high school level in a special education private high school, ages 14 to 21 in Westchester. And I got my master's degree at Queens College as well with Sungul.
Oh, okay.
We went to
That's great.
Together. And prior to that, I worked as a mental health supportive counselor in a residential setting.
That's great. Very, very nice. And I like that you guys are both working with different populations of students, different age groups. So let's start by you telling us a little bit about your work, what you do on a daily basis, what kind of, I don't want to say problems, but what kind of support do you offer to the students that you're working with, to the families, to the school as a whole? And what kind of problems do you also encounter in your field of work?
Would you like to take this, Jess?
Sure, I'll go first. So my day-to-day, I work in a therapeutic school, so I do all counseling and therapeutic work. So
yeah.
It's kind of like a clinic setting. And my day-to-day, you know, it varies. While I do all counseling, different students come in with very different needs. So I'm a case manager. So I could be helping, you know, one student apply to colleges and helping another student who is struggling with anxiety or depression or, you know, going through crisis. There's a wide range. Mm-hmm. In terms of families, the family work is, you know, one of my favorite things. In my population, we deal a lot with school refusal. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get involved with the families a lot, and try to help them put interventions within the home to get their child to school, and just really like supporting the families as they're, you know, trying to meet their child's needs and trying to work with what the child is going through.
Great. Yes, Sungul.
Yeah, so mine is quite different than Jessica's. Even though we graduated from the same program, I feel like our day-to-day looks very different.
Mm-hmm.
So mine is a mixture of doing psychological and educational assessments. So I do these assessments to determine whether students would qualify for special education-related services.
Okay.
We also do a lot of consultation with families, with our administrators and our teachers, for students who may be struggling, you know, academically, socially, or, you know, behaviorally. That's something that we've done a lot this year and previous year because of the pandemic. We've had students who had separation anxiety, who've had a lot of behavioral outbursts in the school, kind of adapting to the new schedule. And so we've made numerous, you know, Google Meets with our families, sharing some of the strategies that we use in school that can be carried over to the home setting. So when doing this, I work collaboratively with our behaviorists in the district, and we come up with behavioral intervention plans that can support the student, you know, in the classroom and outside of the classroom. In addition to that, counseling is a part of my job. However, I'm mostly in the early childhood center, where we have pre-K and kindergarten students. So I do a lot of push-in social emotional learning lessons.
Okay.
So over the past years, we've introduced mindfulness,
mm-hmm.
you know, into the program. And this year I'm doing the zones of regulation. It's a social emotional learning curriculum.
Okay.
I'm going into each classroom and teaching them, you know, the skills to kind of identify their feelings and kind of learn skills to regulate themselves.
That's amazing. My follow-up question would be, do you feel like there is a different kind of needs maybe after the pandemic for students in our schools? Like Sungho mentioned social emotional well-being, and I'm sure Jessica is experiencing similar issues in high school as well. What kind of problems are you encountering now after the pandemic?
You want to go ahead, Sungho.
Sure. So as I mentioned, adapting, especially for students who have not had a formal schooling experience.
Yeah.
Some of our pre-K and kindergarten students, you know, they were doing virtual learning, and then they yes. started first grade, you know, a full day schedule with, you know, a number of students in the classroom. So it's taken a lot of time for them to adjust to the demands of a more structured environment. We've had students constantly asking, when is it time to go home? When am I seeing mom?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a struggle for the families and for the students. So we've seen a lot of anxiety amongst the younger students. And that's why, you know, we've, in addition to doing lessons in the classroom, if a student is exhibiting a high level of anxiety, that's when we'd kind of do more of an individual counseling or group counseling for those students.
It's amazing because there is a lot of students who actually started school virtually or kind of started virtually because of their age. Yeah. Like last year, for example, if you're in pre-K, you would start school virtually because school was virtual. And for even for some students in kindergarten and first grade, they just did a few semesters, month, I would say, in person, and then they had to move virtually. So I feel like you have to reteach class routines, what to expect at school, how to deal with people at school. And it's a whole new set of skills for a lot of our young school population, I would say.
Yeah, and that's why we've kind of told teachers, let's not focus too much on academics first. Let's
yeah.
try to have them adjust, do a lot
exactly.
of, you know, social activities for the students to kind of get to work with one another, because that's also something that we're seeing. There's a lack of knowing, you know, social skills, knowing
yes.
to communicate or play with their peers. And mm-hmm. that really needs to be built up, especially for the younger ones.
Yeah, totally agree with that. What about you, Jessica?
Yeah, so as I'm listening to Sungho talk about this stuff, I realize, you know, in my school, it's hard to make like general statements about our population because mm-hmm. it's an alternative school, and we get mm-hmm. like a very wide variety of like unique kids with unique differing needs.
Yes.
So we kind of, you know, my director always tells us, like, we do what works. We don't prescribe to any one like methodology. So like mm-hmm. in terms of the pandemic, we've seen a wide range of different things. I saw, you know, some kids with incredible resilience during the pandemic, because a lot of our kids have been through traumas in their life, and this is, you know, they have that resilience built up to deal with something like this. So I saw kids graduate and go off to college during the pandemic, transition to virtual learning, and really, you know, I had kids who were virtual their whole senior year, graduate with, you know, wonderful grades, and move on to college. I also saw certain kids where the anxiety, I know Sungho was saying like the anxiety went up. I saw a lot of students, and the older students, anxiety went down being virtual because they didn't have to deal with a lot of like the normal triggers that they have at uh-huh. school and the socialization. But yeah, one thing that has, you know, at the with the older kids that's been hard for me is like sending them off to college, that transition is already very, very difficult for any kid. And during a pandemic, like not for them not to know if things are going to change, like if they're going to go to college and it's just going to be virtual, or they have providers and therapists and things that they have to talk to on the phone or Zoom, they don't want, like, it's very hard for them to adapt and accept those changes. So then they end up going without services. So it's a lot of change, a lot of adapting for them to do, which is hard for kids with, you know, ADHD and autism and a range of needs.
Yeah, it's remarkable to see how the pandemic affected different populations differently, and especially the younger students versus the older students, because I remember reading multiple articles about how students in high school had a lot of social and emotional problems because of separation from their classmates and not being in school. But at the same time, Jessica is also highlighting another very interesting point, which is that it kind of reduced the pressure that they're experiencing at school from triggers like, you know, peer pressure, bullying, comparing themselves to others, which are all very big elements, I would say, that affect the well-being of our youth in high school. Great. So my next question would be, what are, because usually when you pick a career, there is some motivation that stems from somewhere in your life growing up. What are the factors that motivated you to seek a career in school psychology?
I can take that one. I guess in terms of picking my major in psychology and undergraduate studies, I kind of wanted to give the support that I wish I had when I was a student. So, you know, during my schooling years, I've had a lot of anxiety, but I don't think that I got enough help with that in, you know, through my teachers or my guidance counselors. I did not even know that a school psychologist existed until I did my own research and went into the field myself. Mm-hmm. So for me, there was a lack of support, and I kind of wanted to, you know, be that person that will be there for the students when they need that support. So that's kind of what got me into the field of psychology. But after doing my psychology in my psychology studies, I took a gap for 2 years. I worked in a private school where I taught AP psychology courses to high school students. And I really enjoyed being in a school setting, but I felt like I needed more foundation to be able to give the social emotional support to those students. So, I wanted to choose a career where I can work in a school setting, but also, you know, have that aspect. And I did my research, and school psychology was one of the areas that popped out. And like I said, I hadn't met a school psychologist prior to that. So I was kind of trying to figure it out myself. But it turned out to be a great fit for what I wanted.
I love that. And I love the mix between the guidance that you support to students as a school psychologist and the teaching that you have to do also, which is both your passions, right? Great. Yeah. Jessica?
So in undergrad, I was an English major and a psych and education minor. I thought about going into journalism. I loved like English and psychology like equally, and I wasn't sure what to do with that. I loved like stories, like storytelling. I loved people's stories. I loved like human behavior. So I also took time in between undergrad and grad school, and I started working in as a mental health counselor in like group homes with kids with emotional disabilities. And I loved that so much. And I said, you know, I need to get more into, I definitely realized that I wanted a clinical role rather than like a strictly educational role or like a teacher. But same as what Sungul said, I didn't know that a school psychologist existed either until I just researched and found the program that I was going to apply to. And I just felt like it was a perfect mix of all the things that I was interested in, like school psychology. A school psychologist, like your job is very varied and it just doesn't get boring. It's very like stimulating and interesting. And I just felt like it was the right fit for me.
Yeah. And the element of human interaction as well. I think everybody who goes into this kind of career, whether it is teaching at school or working with students is passionate about communicating with others and improving the quality of their lives. So there is a lot of young people who are always unsure about which career to choose and which path to follow in terms of what to do in the future. And I would like to ask you this question to make it easier for this group of young people. What are the steps that are needed for a young person to pursue this kind of career in school psychology? So I know that you did your bachelor's and then you did your master's. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think we both have feelings about how.
Okay. That. And there is a big amount of research that goes into this as well, because this is how I also found my passion. Like, I knew I wanted to teach, but then it kind of like one area took me to the next, through research and interaction with other professionals in the field. And I believe like you have to really follow your passion and just keep researching and learning more about it so that you would find the area that best fits your interest as a professional.
Definitely. Yeah. And so the steps a young person like from high school would have.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Going to college. And we are focusing so much now in schools about like career readiness and college prep and all these different, you know, big parts of our standards in schools. So how would a person like a young person in high school follow their passion to pursue a degree in school psychology?
Yeah, I think Sangul and I probably have different answers to this because we have different perspectives. But from my perspective, I think that, you know, I honestly, like, I didn't know. I learned as I went along. You know, I didn't know after high school that I wanted to be a school psychologist. But I think, you know, it didn't matter that I got my bachelor's in English and then went to get my master's in school psychology. That didn't set me back or like affect me negatively. The only thing is, you know, I had the psychology minor, so that allowed me to get the credits I needed for the master's program, because there are a number of prerequisite credits that you need. But basically, I think, you know, in college, it's important to, you know, just go towards like what you were saying, go towards what you're passionate about. If you really, really, like, I was an English major, and you could say, oh, well, that didn't help you get your degree. Yes, but it did help me figure out where I wanted to go. It's like taking one class that I really, really loved, and then following that and trying to take another, just trying to carve out that path. Sangul, I feel like you're better at talking about like steps. Tell us the steps.
Well, my recommendation would be for anyone who's in high school, if they are interested in the area of psychology, I would advise them to shadow. Every school has guidance counselors. Now there are more and more school psychologists in the building. So this semester, I actually just got an email from my principal asking if I can have an intern from the high school who can shadow me once a week and get to know more about school psychology. And I love that. Yeah, because like I said, had I known earlier, maybe I could have gotten into the field faster and quicker. But so this way, now that there's more of us, hopefully in the field, they have, you know, people they can reach out to and kind of learn more about what the job entails. We, you know, I had applied to our program, and I don't know, Jessica, if you remember, we had an orientation and one of the current students came in and said, just FYI, you're going to be writing a lot of reports. And never would I ever think that a good chunk of my time would go into report writing. And that's what I'm doing a lot of right now. So sometimes you think it's one thing and it turns out to be another. And I think that's why it's important for them to start researching in advance. And just, it helps to read online, but I think that human interaction component that we mentioned, like speaking to people and seeing what they do, is very important. So that's something I think would be helpful. But going into college, any field that's related to mental health, psychology, like Jessica said, you know, even though she had an English degree, having that psychology minor really helped. But even if they just have a few courses in psychology, The programs just require a few prerequisite courses in order to kind of get into the field. But some of those courses you can even take while you're in the school psychology program. So okay. It's a barrier for you to get into the program.
Yeah.
And once you're in, different schools might have different tracks, but ours was full-time was 3 years, part-time was 4 years. And during your last years, you do one semester of practicum, mm-hmm. where you go into a school setting once a week and you take on assessment cases, consultation cases, and counseling cases. And so while you're learning the theoretical part in school, you're getting the practical aspect.
Yeah.
Field. And then, you know, your last year of the program is a full-on internship, you know, the entire year, school hours from 8 to 3, you're literally working without getting paid. You're just interning for a whole year and that's it. You know, once you finish that, there's a practice exam you take and you're ready to go into the field.
Yeah, I think you make a risk what she's saying, like definitely, yes, research, but definitely talk to people because you are not going to see what goes on in the day to day. And I did do that when I was looking into it. I called, you know, people that I knew, you know, oh, my friend, my mom's friend knows somebody who's a school psychologist. Go talk to them. And, you know, I think most school psychologists, if they're in this for the right reasons, they want to talk to people who are wanting to come into the field and explain their day to day and talk about the profession.
Okay. So as Sungul and Jessica, you guys mentioned that everything comes with a little bit of challenges. There are certain aspects of your job that you did not really know much about, like the report writing, for example. What are some of the challenges that you face as a school psychologist? And what are some of the challenges that you face to actually become a school psychologist in the first place, if any? It's okay to have none.
I guess some of the challenges that I faced while, you know, working in this career is there's a lot of paperwork and compliance that goes into what we do. You know, especially when you're working with a special education population, we develop individualized education plans and, you know, we have mm-hmm. to make sure that that's followed with fidelity. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of timelines that you need to follow in terms of testing, for example. And it's really, you have to master effective communication between the families and teachers to kind of meet those deadlines and get everything in on time. So that was, you know, that was a struggle. And in terms of developing IEPs, I didn't really know much of that until I had to do it on my own. So there was a lot of, you know, making phone calls and trying to ask for help and see how I can go about that. So, you know, the program really trains you for what you have to do in terms of like working with children, but the compliance aspect, you kind of have to figure out while you're in there. So that was definitely something that was a challenge for me. But in terms of while in the program, I think managing, you know, I was married while I was in the program. So managing the home activities and taking care of that while also trying to do my graduate studies and taking on a full-time internship, it was hard to kind of juggle all of those at once. And so that's something that I would call a challenge.
I believe like every career would come with its own challenges, as you mentioned, and there are certain aspects of any career that you would only find out about when you start working in a school building or in any kind of field. So you're both female school psychologists, and my next question would be, why is it important for females to be in the field of school psychology, especially females of various backgrounds? I would say people of color, people with disabilities, people with who speak different languages and come from different cultures. Why is that important for our students, given the demographics of our schools nowadays?
Well, I think we learned when we were in just by looking around when we were in our program and by, you know, the data shows that most school psychologists are white women and we need more diversity in the field. We like desperately need more diversity in the field. Why do we, I mean, so just, I don't know. I mean, we just do. The kids need a variety of perspectives. They need to see themselves represented in the people that are counseling them. I mean, it's so important to have people of color. And we actually at Queens College, I mean, I do have to say, like, Queens College is so, so diverse. And we had a research department that was doing research on how to retain students of color in school psychology programs, how to like prevent them from dropping out, because she found that students of color would drop out of school psychology programs due to experiencing microaggressions from the professors. That there was a lot of, you know, that was like at the forefront of, you know, what we were learning about when we were in school, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with Jessica. Representation, I think, really matters. You know, maybe 40, 50 years from now, the field was dominated by white men. And so now slowly we're starting to see more women in the field, more people of color, which is really important for our students to see, because women have different talents and different perspectives that they can bring on to this field. You know, when I was interning at the high school, there were students who were pregnant and they wanted to talk about it with someone, but they didn't feel comfortable talking to a man. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having that option to say, okay, there is a female psychologist you can speak to is, I think, very valuable and very special for these students. So that's that representation, I think, is crucial in that sense. And I think it helps to be role models for the younger generations that are coming. You know, they need to see more women who are in the field, who are able to navigate, you know, having children, or, you know, being in a relationship, having families, but at the same time, being able to pursue a career of their interest.
I totally agree with all of that. And it's also very similar to what research and education says, that students need, as you said, to see themselves represented. They need the role models. And that's why there is a big push in New York City, for example, to have Black male teachers, because the majority of our students are Hispanic and Black, and a lot of Hispanic teachers as well. And even though, like, you see the changes happening, it's very slow, but I'm hoping that eventually students would be able to see themselves represented in the school admin and school faculty as well. Leadership is also an area where this is still lacking. You still see that school leadership is dominated by a certain race or a certain group, where it does not always represent the teachers and the students in the school. And that's also very, very important. Any final thoughts, ideas that you would like to add for anybody considering a career in school psychology?
I'm just going to continue with the previous conversation.
Yes, sure.
Having that, you know, people of color and women in the field,
yes.
We utilize, you know, a number of testing instruments,
yes,
to mm-hmm. assess cognitive abilities and academic skills in children. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that those tests aren't always normed for the population that we work with.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes there's a question of validity. Like, is the student really struggling with cognitive disability, or is the test just not, you know, assessing this based on the their background or how they grew up? You know, asking a question about snow for someone who's never seen snow in their life,
yes.
Is it really that something they should know and they don't, or they've just never been exposed to it? So just a number of things that, as I administer tests, I see them and I say, you know, I can't expect this child to know the answer to this question, but I have to score it a 0. So is it really you know, a valid estimate of this child's abilities. And that's why I think it's important for people coming from different backgrounds to contribute to the field.
Correct.
Their perspective, so we can, you know, it could be normed on different populations.
That's totally true. And we also talk a lot about culturally responsive education and culturally responsive school teaching and leadership. But I'm wondering if that's also the case in psychology. Do you guys talk about that in psychology?
I think our program was very big on that.
Yes.
Okay.
Really sensitive interventions and, you know, kind of being aware of our own biases, trying to learn about the different cultures that we work with, which I think is crucial.
And I love that point that you brought up about validity of testing. And I believe like sometimes you just have to like redo things so that they would represent all the learning groups that you're working with, especially students of color, English language learners, special education students, people who come from different cultures, as you said, and cannot relate to the specific experiences that we see in these testing and measurement tools. Mm-hmm. Great. Jessica, do you have anything that you would like to add before we end?
Sure. Just on the point that Sungul said about the testing, the validity of those tests, just for school psychologists to know that we can write that in the report, that the validity is compromised by those things. And then say it at the meeting, because it's important for the parents to know that this tool is not, unfortunately, this is the only tool we have, but it's not a fair assessment of your child. So the problem is with the system or the tool, not inherent in your child. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and I like that. You know, we now have a younger generation of school psychologists who are aware of these issues and who are able to bring these up in meetings and discuss it with school admin, where it wasn't really the case in the old days, when students were sometimes evaluated in ways that were not always credible or valid just because they're students of color or who come from different backgrounds and different ethnicities. So that's a great point to bring up as well. Well, Sungul and Jessica, that was a very insightful I'm doing a lot of class observations right now. So interview. I would love to continue the conversation with you more about school psychology. And I would love also to get your contact information, maybe when I post the podcast episode, for whoever has any questions or who has any areas that they would like to bring up and discuss with you further with regards to school psychology and your careers. Thank you so much for making the time this morning.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
No problem.
As well.
Thank you. It was lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.